Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, I'm so happy this morning. my theme came on. Now, you got to understand, these little miracles that we have here, you know, it's even the big networks have, you know, technical difficulties and things like that. So I don't feel quite so bad, but, you know, we figured out what's going on. I don't know why it wasn't playing for a while, but now it is, so that's good. Jean's also having technical difficulties, too. In fact, I think I just saw her on the screen and then disappeared. We're going to hear from Bill Fecky when he calls in, which is going to be kind of cool, too, because Bill's been away for a bit. Bill used to do the regular Thursday morning Fecky report. And so he also has a Fecky report page on Facebook. And so we're waiting to get Bill here to find out what he did on his vacation. It's kind of like school. You know, Johnny, what did you do on your vacation? Well, apparently he's had some fun. So he's been traveling around to some of our great national historic sites. And so I wanted to ask him on to find out the condition of them and what it's like to go see these places. And travel has always been, I think, my best education. The things I've learned traveling, things you can't learn anywhere else. You know, you travel on Europe for 3 months, you know, by yourself. And trust me, I was 22 when I did this because I moved to California when I was 24. But 22 years old, running around Europe, basically meeting people in all kinds of different countries, having way too much fun. It was fascinating. It was just a blast to be able to do this. And also travel, and I did it by train. I travel around the United States by train, you know, and I intend to do a whole lot more traveling with Action Radio as of course, my goal is to bring this to the world. And so we're already starting that now. I've got some friends in Australia now. And what we're doing, we're forming, is I think the thing is Clubhouse. And so Clubhouse is this wonderful thing I just discovered. Oh, actually, I was told about it. And so with Clubhouse, I'm able to talk to people, you know, in these various, it's like a big chat group kind of thing, right? And so I've got a new group of friends from actually, you know, one Facebook friend originally. And then, you know, now with this group in Australia. And so after that, I talked to my webmaster. I said, you think we could add some categories to the website to include, you know, legislation for different countries. And so we're already branching out into Australia. We've got categories. We're all set up to take citizen legislation from Australia, Canada, Great Britain, and New Zealand. And so we're going to go from there. I'm sure we're going to pick up other countries, Switzerland, Israel, Germany, which are other popular places for Action Radio, and some of the different countries out there. China, unfortunately, has disappeared off the map. So, I don't know if I offended Xi Jinping personally, which I certainly hope, or whether they just decided that, we are a little bit too much freedom for them and for Taiwan. And so we'll see what happens. So Gene, I got you bouncing back and forth here. Let's see if we can get you. Well, if you're on mic, you can make that live yourself. And if not, then I can, if you want to call my cell phone, we can do that too. So we're all having, it's growing pains. The show is growing so fast and so many things are happening. There we go. Looks like your mic's working. Gene, good morning.
It is. Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
I'm excited. This is great.
Another day of computer things, technology. Gotta love it or hate it. I don't know.
Well, this is one of the hardest things.
Well,
I don't know if Blog Talk is geared up necessarily for this. That's part of the deal. I think it's quite interesting that, you know, they're not used to it. I mean, most people run their own show, and most people just have people call in on the phone and listen, and we don't do that. You know, so we want folks listening online so we can keep the phone lines free, you know, for callers. And do you want to have fun and screen this call we have right now, or should I just throw them on the air? Up to you. I know who it is.
You can throw them on the air.
Okay, let's see if we can do that.
I'm getting the chat going, guys, so feel free to.
Well, thanks for mentioning that, too. So if anybody wants to join us and you don't want to necessarily call in, I mean, hopefully we go from chat to call in because it's a pretty easy process. But for anybody that wants to, it's pretty easy to do. So you need to start a free listener account with Blog Talk Radio. And I think you can find that at the top of – Gene, you can check this out, too. The top of our regular page, you know, as we're broadcasting, you look up there and it'll say either live chat or free, you know, or free account or something like that. Whatever it is, you go there. And once you're registered with Blog Talk, then you can sign into the live chat. And the live chat, we've got a couple of different functions here on our screens. I've got episode info, which is what I look at, so I know what I'm supposed to do. And then live chat, Gene, who doesn't have to know what I'm supposed to do. Or maybe you, actually you probably should. I think you can go back and forth. You can play with it and figure it out. But I that's just one thing I can't take on at this particular point is live chat. And I still have to make Gene's hotel bell. So we're going to have a nice little ping when Gene says, oh, Greg, I need your attention. So all these fun things are being worked out. Anyway, let me play this and get our special returning reporter.
On Tight Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. I am back. At least it's
about
one night
too. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good to have you back, Bill.
It's one night only for right now.
One night? What time zone are you in? Morning here.
Okay, one morning only.
Okay, that sounds good. Yes, a special return engagement, the one and only Bill Fecky, the lovely and talented Bill Fecky, who has traveled the nation and is now going to report to us some of the wonderful things he did on his vacation. Okay, Bill. I miss having you on. I do miss having you on.
Yeah. So I celebrated, since I've been off the air, I celebrated a 50th birthday back in August.
Congratulations. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Bill. Happy birthday to you.
And for the record, technically you're not allowed to sing that song on air because that song is actually copyrighted.
Oh, what, Mozart? Who wrote it? What?
I'm not quite sure who, but there was a radio personality in Arkansas who actually sang to Oliver North on air years ago, and whoever it was that had the copyright to it actually sued her
for
singing that song on air. Yeah, it's kind of interesting backstory on that. Which who knew that song was actually copyrighted?
Well, like I said, it was written by Mozart. It's one of the first songs he wrote. He was 5 years old. And so, I mean, this is why I can put the thinker, of Rodin as our sort of emblem for our show here, because I think he made that in the 1800s sometime. So it's long past any particular problem. If anybody, has a problem, the descendants of Rodin, give me a call. We'll work something out. But in the meantime, certain things after a while, they become public domain. I think I would be surprised if Happy Birthday isn't public domain if someone really wanted to push it. But I can always add a variation to it. If I sing the Beatles version, that's the same problem. I'll have to make up my own.
Yeah.
Remember the Flintstones? Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary,
yes, exactly.
Happy anniversary. but of course, now that's copyright too. Well, hey, listen, this show is copyright, so anybody tries to call themselves Action Radio, it's already done, so just don't even think about that. Get my lawyer.
Exactly.
Mosley after you. Big Bad John. Jonathan Mosley. Legal mind extraordinary.
So,
but enough about me.
So, for my 50th birthday, my wife was making a decision on whether to throw a big party for me and spend a bunch of money or what she wanted to do. And I told her flat out that I didn't want a big party. I'd never been one to celebrate my birthday very much anyways, but I told her, I go, if we're going to spend money on my day, I'd rather spend it on a big trip. I was in dire need of a vacation anyways. Mm-hmm. I haven't taken one in about 2 years. Mm. I've been campaigning for the last 5 years for either myself or for Donald Trump. It came to that point where it's like I was breaking down. One of the reasons why I left Action Radio, I just needed to take a break from everything for a while. So increase of business and whatnot. But with that being said, we decided to take a huge trip. And my goal was to see Mount Rushmore and Yellowstone because I haven't seen them since I was a kid. But my wife just hates driving. It's 22 hours. It's 23 hours just to get to Mount Rushmore from here driving.
Ooh.
We don't
do it all in one day.
That's the thing is that she likes to make stops along the way. So we made like a little bit longer of a trip just to make it a little bit more enjoyable. So every day we're doing something, We went from here to the Badlands in South Dakota.
Which is where? In North Dakota?
Okay, that.
Or South Dakota?
South Dakota.
Okay.
It's kind of south Midwest, if you want to call it that, of the state. It's not exactly in the center of the state. It's a little bit to the west in the state. But South Dakota, then we went to Mount Rushmore, Custer National Park, and then Crazy Horse Memorial. Now, and then that was the first 2 days. And the third day we did Little Bighorn. And I'm going to stop right there on the first part of the trip because this is where I really want to spend most of our time talking because it's not really about my trip as much as about how government has patterns of abuse.
Oh yeah. But I want to talk about it as your vacation just because I thought it was funny. But it's true.
Yeah.
But just people should always know that we always have a loftier purpose here for everything we do. So there are some serious reasons for discussing the monuments, you know, the condition of the government, the Crazy Horse Memorial. Because you know, I'd love to get Chief Dan Scott back in particular for the Creek Tribe report. This is of sincere interest for me, our memorials, what's going on and our history, you know, because people are trying to erase it. And so this is very important to discover and for people to go do what you did. I drove from, you know, Boston to San Francisco when I moved there, back in 84, drove the whole country. That's an experience too. People should do, but, I went, you know, by Yellowstone, but not through it. Cause I was, you know, on a mission and I had a U-Haul, you know, but, I'd love to go see these places. I want to talk about driving too, as how many people are driving as opposed to flying these days, but driving, my guess is a lot more people are driving simply because, you know, yes, it's longer travel time, but what you lose in not being able or not having to be stuffed into an airplane, in a tiny little space with no food, and you know, have a mask slapped on your face the whole time. I think more and more people are probably driving anyway. So you can tell me about
that
as well. But yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, it's funny because I have three friends right now that are doing the exact same trip I'm doing.
Hmm.
They started a week after the week I came back. They took off, and all of them who are habitual flyers actually drove this time. So yeah, so that kind of validates what you had to say. You know, I've always kind of known of the history of the U.S. government and Indians, but I don't even call them Indians anymore after everything I've learned.
We did on the show.
Yeah,
I mean, talk to Dan Skyhorse. I mean, you know, Native American is actually dehumanizing and de-individualizing the American Indian because, you know, anybody who's born here is a Native American. I mean, I know for convenience,
right,
the colloquial, we're talking about American Indians, but it's like when the Washington Redskins Memorial was dropped, that really pissed off a lot of folks, particularly, you know, I think the person that created it, who was a, you know, American Indian, and that was celebrating the warrior spirit. That was a warrior, you know. And so if you take that away, it's like when Land of Lakes, you know, took off the Indian maiden, you know, on the cover.
Right.
As I said, they Chief Skyhorse says, you know, typical situation, they killed the Indian and kept the land because the land scenery is still in the background.
Right.
You know, so it was Land O'Lakes, well, you know, they dumped Jemima too. And she's a famous person in history. There was an Aunt Jemima, and she was, you know, incredibly successful and did some amazing things and, you know, promoted a great product a lot of people are still using. Except it's not Aunt Jemima anymore. You know, what is it, Antifa pancake mix, or what do they call it now? I don't know.
I haven't even paid attention to what they call it now. But, I kind of knew a little bit about the history in that area. I've kind of followed history a lot of my life, but yeah, I found it very interesting and kind of ironic that the Crazy Horse Memorial is inside of Custer State Park.
That is a little ironic, isn't it? Well, was it Crazy Horse that fought Custer?
Yes, it was. And it was his people, not the Sioux, because I want to get into that for a second, but the Lakota and Dakota Indians, who are the ones who end up killing Custer.
Mm-hmm.
All this started, and this is the part I did not know about. I was always a big fan of U.S. Grant, but I never realized what an ass he truly was. He came across as a across as a really good guy. He's the one who who defended the Indians and gave them all their territory and protected areas that they asked for, and they gave it to him. But then U.S. went through a big recession, and he was, you know, the country was bankrupt after the Civil War, and they found gold in the Black Hills, and that's the sacred ground of the Lakota or Dakota Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, settlers found out about this and started going there. And then the Indians were protecting their land and, you know, in the big fight. And then, of course, U.S. Grant felt it was his duty to protect his citizens. And so he basically tore up the agreement that he instigated with the Dakota.
What a surprise. Like, that's never happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And basically forced them off the property.
Mm-hmm.
They refused, you know, a lot of them did go, you know, just like most Americans, there's only a handful of true warriors. All the rest of them are, you know, just, you know, everyday people, not weak
lambs
by
for the
any
slaughter.
Imagination. Just, yeah.
Shooting up so, that, you know, messenger RNA, you know, you're just shooting that stuff up.
So,
you know, it's a menu characterization.
So, Sitting Bull is already older at this point. Mm-hmm. He had already fought the government for years and years. He took a group of people up to Canada, but Crazy Horse said, I'm standing my ground. I'm not fighting. I mean, I'm not going to give up. He held a bunch of warriors and that little bighorn, and this is which is a common mistake too, is that people think that Custer State Park is where Custer died, but it wasn't. Custer actually died at Little Bighorn. And if anyone ever has a chance to go to Little Bighorn, go there. All this is open land, but mm-hmm. the way they tell a great story there, there are storyboards all across this path. You follow it. You could walk it, but it's more of a driving path, or take a bike or something. You could see the landscape. They show pictures of where the camps were, where the fighting happened, and you could visualize it. They do a great job allowing you to visualize it because the same mountains are there. So you could see where mm-hmm. Where certain things happen. And they did a great job of it. And my wife, who was just starting to learn about all this before we went out there, because I was making her watch a lot of history stuff to kind of get caught up in.
Watch
know,
this
understand
before
why
we go.
Doing this.
Sorry, just kidding.
Well, no, now she's hooked on it. She's actually
okay,
hooked
good.
On American history after this. And
that's wonderful.
After going
yeah.
to Little Bighorn, she her heart was just like, just really got, you know, swelled because of, you know,
yeah.
what transpired there at Little Bighorn. And I thought what Sitting Bull said about Little Bighorn was the best, is that, you know, at Little Bighorn, nobody won. Now, granted, yeah. the Lakota Indians won that fight. But after that fight at Little Bighorn, nothing was the same afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it took General Sherman, after Custer died, General Sherman went in, and he couldn't even defeat the Lakota Indians. And so what he did is what kind of what I want to talk about here in the last couple minutes is mm-hmm. he killed all the buffalo. He killed all the buffalo.
Yeah.
And he did that because that was their food source. Because the U.S. government told the Indians, either you go on our reservations and you take our, rations. It's not rations. What's another word for rations?
I don't know.
Use rations.
And, okay.
Yeah, but, you know, so basically they're telling all these Indians to get off the property. We're going to put mm-hmm. you where we want to put you, and mm-hmm. we're going to feed you what we want to feed you.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar today?
Sounds like every Democrat-run city.
Exactly. Now, on top of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Indians were still surviving out there, and they were still
yeah.
fighting, and they're still winning. So General Sherman came up with this great idea, let's kill their food source.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar today? Yes, it does.
Well,
the government has taken over all the farming. The government's taken over all the farming. They have mm-hmm. inflated our dollar to the point where we can't buy any. At a decent
yeah.
price. And so what happened to the Indians is happening to us. And the parallel was just so amazing. But, you know, I want to say, and, you know, people don't understand, you know, why didn't they just go eat something else? The buffalo, and this is one of the Lakota Indians who did a little speech at the Crazy Horse Memorial and a dance and stuff. It was really cool. But
mm-hmm.
what he calls the buffalo is the Walmart of the Indian nation.
Yeah.
Because there are over 50 uses of the buffalo that the Indians – so when they killed one buffalo, every piece of that buffalo was used for something. Food,
mm-hmm.
weapons, clothes, shelter, I mean, it just goes on and on and on what they use the buffalo for. And so they that was like a one-stop shop for them. They killed a buffalo. It's one-stop shop. You know, the whole family ate. Whole family got dressed. They had shelter and everything. So by Sherman killing all the buffalo, it starved the Indians to the point where they were begging the government to help them. Does that sound familiar to them?
Oh, yeah. This all sounds very familiar. Well, you know, it's interesting. We've talked about this in history. I think Chief Dan Skyhorse mentioned this, that, you know, Hitler, looking for the way to persecute the Jews before the Holocaust, you know, looked to the U.S. government treatment of the American Indian. And I said, oh, looks like they got it right. You know, this is in Hitler's war mind. And so that was a model. You know, it was the model for what Germany did. And so you look at this now, and this goes to the vaccine mandates. It's like nothing's really changed. They're doing the same thing. They're doing it to everybody now. It's not just that, you know, it's like when they came for the Indian, you know, I didn't speak up because I wasn't an American Indian kind of thing. You know, so when it's being done to somebody else, it's okay. You know, and so when segregation was segregating black Americans, that, you know, 13 million, whatever the population percentage was a lot less, a lot more white people in those days. You know, so, okay, fine. You know, I mean, a lot of people were concerned, but, you know, the overall nation, you know, there were different priorities until that was taken care of for, well, they take care of is probably not the right word, but at least we got the Civil Rights Act. But now everybody's under the vaccine mandate. You know, the government wants you to shoot up that messenger RNA, you know, and we've talked about that for years, but the idea that they think they can mandate it, that they're in charge, that we have no free will. I mean, this is the whole point of Action Radio, is that we're going to write laws that we want to be governed by. And I don't know where this is going to go, but it's growing. And people are sort of saying, you know what? We need to stop this now and change the course of what's going on.
Well, the other thing, though, Greg, uh-huh. The other thing is that, you know, in correlation to all this, what I'm talking about with the Indians, uh-huh. is the fact that the government is restricting medication that has proven to work to cure COVID.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're restricting the use of it, uh-huh. thus begging people to, you know, make the government give us shots.
Yep. Take the vaccine life will be normal again. Yeah. We will give you your life back that we had no right to take if you do what we say. It's
correct.
The false bargain. It's an incredibly dangerous thing. And I don't think most people see that because they're so scared. They're so paranoid of a flu bug. You know, yes, genetically enhanced, obviously. But the fact is that the reports are coming out that our immune system is a whole lot better. You know, and, you know, like any new disease, people do get sick. And the most vulnerable, you know, those that are, you know, obese, old, comorbidities, all the other things, those are the folks that are dying, you know. And there's so much information that, you know, you've got a 99% survival rate on average. And that doesn't count the 0.9, 0.99, depending on how old you are. You know, so they give the misinformation. I'm sure they lied to the Indians, you know, of course. You know, and doing the same kind of restrictions, our food's being restricted. You know, even the seeds, you know, I think government controls the seeds. You can't plant your own gardens the way you used to. The amount of varieties, we used to have over 115, I think, varieties of apples. You know, now we're down to about 6 main ones.
Well,
I'm glad you
brought that up because I just read an article about that the other day. That there is a guy in Germany, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Who is bringing back all somehow he got seeds or he figured out how to make it possible, but mm-hmm. he actually found he's actually bringing back 50 different apples that had once been extinct, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Well, yeah, but he's actually bringing them all back. I just happened to read that article the other day, so it's kind of funny you mentioned about the apples.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so
well,
there
local
are people
gardens.
Who are fighting all this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why they give sterile seeds, you know, in plants. That's why a lot of, you know, vegetables and plant and fruits come seedless so that you can't make your own because they want to profit from that. It's a huge agribusiness. Agribusiness is another thing we're going to be taking on at some point here. But that's fascinating. Yeah, you starve the Indians. You give them a disease like smallpox in the blankets that was done on the Trail of Tears. You know, you withhold a cure. You kill the food source. You control the food source. I mean, Gates is buying up all the farmland. You know, I would, you know, and especially if China buys up all our farmland, that's insane. You know, that's national suicide.
Yep.
And so all these different things are happening. We know they're preventable. And here's another one that's, this wouldn't have affected the American Indians, but the national debt. you know, the bankrupting of our country, you know, economic treason, as I call it. And then they're pulling out the same tired old argument. Well, we have to raise the debt limit to meet our obligations. No, you don't. You need to lower your obligations to meet the debt limit. You know, and it's so simple, and yet nobody's saying that. But that is the cure. The cure is to lower the is to cut the spending to meet the debt limit, and then cut the spending so you can start paying off the national debt, and then you keep lowering the debt limit progressively as you keep cutting the spending. But there's some kind of psychological aversion to that. Anyway, you made a great point earlier. The Crazy Horse Memorial is in Custer State Park. How far is it from Little Bighorn? I found that fascinating too.
About 3 hours.
So that's a pretty good distance.
It is, and that's what I was really amazed about. When I first started plotting this trip, how big of an area the Lakotas had. If you're talking about, I mean, because they actually went to the almost to Yellowstone, which was five and a half hours from Little Bighorn. So it was basically 8 hours or almost 9 hours from Custer State Park. So, I mean, and that's driving at 85 miles an hour, because the speed limit there is 80 miles an hour, which is awesome, by the way.
So you always go 5 miles over. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Set the cruise control, sit back, and you actually accomplish that. You actually can get somewhere. Do you remember, you might have been a little younger then, but do you remember Jimmy Carter's 55 miles an hour?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know of it. I mean, I was young at that point.
I was pretty young, too. But it was insane. You know, I just graduated high school, and all of a sudden I'm getting a car, and I have to drive 55, and Sammy Hagar comes up with a song, I can't drive 55, you know, and I feel like you talk to people today, we used to drive 55 miles an hour. It was national worship. It was national. They just mandated the speed limit for no reason. Of course, the cars then, they weren't even efficient to hit like 70. I mean, they were designed and engineered for traveling at 70, 75 miles an hour. So the benefit was wasted by going 20 miles an hour slower, plus the loss of your you know, lifetime travel time. You're spending extra time in the road to do. I was insane. But
I want to talk about also, though, which one thing I was surprised about up there was the gas prices. So I paid $2.65 for gas here before I left Pensacola at BJ's, which, you know, they're always cheaper than the rest of the country or the rest of the area. But Coda, it was $3.69. Montana was $3.89. Wyoming was $3.99. And these are all Republican areas. And the gas prices were just really, really high.
Did you ask anybody in the biz why?
You know, I did not. I just kind of breezed through and just kept going on my merry way. And then it wasn't until I got down to Texas, because what we did was after we went down to Grand Tetons in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, after Yellowstone. Then we went to Rocky Mountain National Park. Then we continued south to the Garden of the Gods and Pikes Peak in Colorado Springs. And then our final stop was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which if you're into art, Santa Fe, New Mexico is great.
Oh, I've been there.
I
love Santa Fe.
Sculpture. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, to me, it was just too much. I mean, every single store and every single street was an art store.
It's a little overdone now. You know, it's like the hate in San Francisco. It's not hippies anymore. It's all commercialized. You know, so it's Santa Fe. I was in Santa Fe 20 years ago.
And then of that, there was an art festival going on at the same time.
Well,
it's just like,
what did you expect, Bill? Everybody was turning out.
So we walked around. We saw the world, you know, the oldest church in America. We saw the oldest house in America, and kind of walked around a little bit and said, okay, let's just go home. So it wasn't until we got to Texas to where we actually paid $2.69 for gas again.
Yeah.
The rest of the trip was fine.
Well, we're an oil-producing area here. I think the problem they have up in those states is not that they're Republicans, is that they have transit costs. You know, is the oil trucked in, or is it pipeline? Don't forget, insurrectionist Biden, the leader of the coup, canceled the XL pipeline, which was from Canada to Texas, right through, I'm guessing, the area that you drove through. Now, I don't know if it was they had provisions to, take part of the pipeline and have it refined up there. I don't think so. But the fact is, there's an awful lot of oil that could have gone back up to that area from the XL pipeline.
Correct.
And so that probably has raised the prices, too. Now, there are oil producing states up there. I think, isn't North Dakota producing oil?
North Dakota is the big oil producing state. more millionaires per capita than anywhere else in America is right there in North Dakota.
It's too cold, though.
Because everyone sold their property.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's – I mean, you went up there at a really good time of year, but, you know, if you went up there 2 months from now up in North Dakota, it would not be the same trip, trust me.
No,
it's a little
it
colder.
And maybe even 1 month. No, trust me. When we were at Yellowstone, because we camped out. Yeah, we love camping. Uh-huh. We camped out, and each morning it was 35 degrees every single morning when we woke up.
Wow.
But it felt good. You know, I mean, it never got above 75. I think at 80 was the highest we ever got in any one day.
Yeah,
good. It was the perfect time. You know, the only part that sucked was the liberal California screwing up my vacation. I could not see the Grand Tetons in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, because of the smoke from the fires.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I remember the fires that were there when I was there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you know, part of Yellowstone, I smelled smoke one day at Yellowstone. It was very, like a hint of smoke I smelled, but you could see the smoke in the air. It's more of it, like, it looked like a haze, but it was smoke. Grand Tetons was horrible. Rocky Mountain National Park was a slight little haze. But I guess the wind just turned on us or something. But, you know, now a friend of mine's up there and took pictures, and it's clear as can be because the winds have changed and whatnot.
Right.
Mostly because, you know, now they're getting the northern winds coming in. So, but yeah, that was a great trip. I learned so much up in South Dakota and at Little Bighorn. That's a trip that everyone needs to take to fully understand exactly how the government works and why, and this is the important part, why it's so important to teach history in school.
Mm-hmm.
Because without teaching history in school, you cannot see the patterns and you can't stop. People don't understand why we fight today because they don't understand what history, you know, what happened in history. And if they understood what happened in history, they would know, they would join our fight.
You know, it's interesting, too. You mentioned Sherman especially. You know, it makes sense that he would think to destroy the food source and, the Native American Walmart, because think of what he did with the South. You know, Sherman destroyed Atlanta, you know, starved out the South.
Yep.
I mean, he's the slash and burn general. So he wasn't doing anything different in the Civil War that he did. And that happened. Now, Little Bighorn was before or after the Civil War? I think it was before, wasn't it?
After.
Well,
it was after.
After,
wasn't it? Yeah, it was after. Yeah, because Grant was president.
Okay, so that would have been right after the Civil War then, because he was president.
Yeah.
The war was 60 to 64.
So 65, 66, I think he became president.
Okay, all right, so it was
maybe
that quick.
Maybe in 64. Might have been even in 64 he was president. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it happened right away because they went into a depression right away.
And Lincoln was assassinated, so was Grant immediately appointed right after that? I'm not clear on that part of history.
Was
it an election?
I want to say Grant was elected. Grant was elected.
Gene? We need Gene for this one. And I got Jonathan on the line, too. So
yeah, exactly.
A second too.
But I do have to go. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Grant Gene? Was elected 1869 to 1877.
Oh. So who was
late.
President?
Okay.
Who was president after Lincoln then?
Let's find out.
This is why he produces.
Oh,
it's so cool. Yeah. Bill?
Yeah, I'm so close. I have a tip. It's not McKinley. McKinley was after Grant.
Johnson. Andrew Johnson.
Ah, yes.
With his stellar record. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No wonder why the government went into a recession. But Greg, I got to go earn my dollar for today. It was great talking to you.
Good talking to
you. You know, we're looking forward to a good election cycle next year. It should be it's going to be extremely interesting seeing what's going to happen with Ron DeSantis and his presidential run that he's now denying he's going to make.
Of course he's going to make it.
So
he started running the day he took office for the governorship. I mean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
all right,
but
sir.
You guys have a good rest of the show, and we will talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill. Bill Fecky with the returning engagement of the Fecky Report probably early in 2022. I'm not as optimistic as Bill because I think what happened in California is a precursor to what's going to happen in the midterms. I think that because the gelding old party, the GOP, did nothing to monitor the vote. I had an idea yesterday that if there are going to be mail-in ballots, then there have to be observers in the post office from both parties. You know, that's the only way to ensure it. But anytime you have a break in the chain of custody between voter and ballot box, you've got fraud. And so, you know, that's the next thing to do is eliminate all breaks in the chain of custody between voter and ballot box and either optical scanner or hand counter. If anybody else gets in the way of that, you know, you should, that should eliminate that vote. Anyway, I got Jonathan. I want to play his theme. It's the longest one we have, but it's probably one of the best ones too. So we'll be right back. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago. That yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice. Pictures on the wall of great minds who advance the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial, many times, that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley.
Good morning, Jonathan. Welcome back.
Good morning. Hi. I have a good signal here, but if my speakerphone is a problem, let me know.
No, it sounds pretty good for now. I've got a long list of topics for us this morning, so we're not going to run out of things to do. And of course, Claire Lopez will be joining us, you know, at the 15 minutes past the next hour.
But
I got to
say
something. What's that? Oh, yeah. I got some fun news for you. We've got one of our big law firms around here, Levin Pampantonio. I'm sure they're – I don't know if they're recognized now, but they're huge around here. They're offering something called the People's Law School. And I want to plug this because I think it's a damn good idea. In fact, I'm going to try and get them on the show to talk about it. They're offering these two-hour classes, you know, every Tuesday from 6 to 8 in Seville Square, our historic area. I think they're free law classes, people's law, you know, so that people can get, you know, more understanding of the law. I'm thinking of going myself, actually. But this is kind of cool. I've never heard a law firm doing this, offering classes, you know, just in law for just regular folks. Anyway, I just want to plug them. I think it's kind of cool.
No, that's cool. It's good. Did you want to talk with things going on? Greg had asked me to do sort of a big picture step back and talk about how the law works, because we have, and I don't know if you want to talk about some other things before that.
No, it's always, been the big topic first. If we don't start with the big topic, we never get to it. So I don't remember. Well, I asked you a lot of questions, but So what have you got to explain?
Well, at the risk of us getting distracted, I did want to make a quick announcement speak to the president that the Taliban in Afghanistan are not vaccinated and they don't wear masks. I just thought maybe that would affect how.
How about that? And the 100,000 people are here, you know, they brought out all the wrong people. They need to take the goat herders back and bring out the Americans. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, what I'd love to do is go back and get a film clip of or video clip of Biden, you know, before Obama was speaking through his brain, you know, what's left of it, when he used to say Taliban, you know, Americans say Taliban. And somewhere along the way, Biden started saying Taliban, like Obama says Taliban. And so that's when you know Obama took over, you know, the Biden insurrection. Well, of course, I think he's always been in charge of it, but he's speaking directly. You know, he must have some earpiece or a brain chip, or he just talks to him and says, "Here, Joe, this is what you're going to say today." You know, when he gets his daily instructions for what to do. But this is the clue. This is how you know Obama's running everything, is because of the way Biden talks, and when he uses the same inflections that Obama uses that he didn't used to use, you know, he got it from Obama.
So they're speaking directly. This is my theory that Obama's behind all this crap. That's why you have all these people from Afghanistan here that have no reason to be here. They're not refugees. They're resettlement. They're a foreign population to screw up our country. That's why Obama, you know, wanted to nation build the Taliban in Afghanistan. That's why they got all the weapons. You know, we've got some weapons going to Iran. Well, you know, I'm going to ask Claire this. Well, why has there been no effort to get him back or sabotage him or destroy him? To ask our allies and other nations there, hey, we screwed up. Can you blow up our weapons, please? You know, there's nothing going on. There was no follow-up to that. So Taliban. So Biden, when he talks about the Taliban, I know it's coming directly from Obama. That's how he talks.
Because of who he spent time talking to. Influences how you talk. Yeah. Anyway,
well, because if you're imitating, if you're repeating exactly what you're told to repeat, if you're reading speeches, if you're not really there, if you're hanging on to what's left of your mental faculties, you know, by saying, okay, you can be president if, you know, you say these things, and if someone tells you and says the word Taliban like Taliban as opposed to Taliban, like an American would say it, you know that that's you know where it came from. I mean, that's a giveaway. That's a perfect clue as to what happened. Anyway, we digressed.
Well, then,
back to the law. Yeah, go ahead.
So the thing is, you have been wanting some time, I think, to talk about, you know, how the courts interpret things, which is a deep subject.
Good.
It's a difficult subject.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a long, you know, you could probably... I'm not saying it's just an introduction. It's something that somebody has to probably hear more than once. So it's sort of a first look at it. But as you know, last week, Joe Biden issued mandates for employees that they have to get vaccinated. And so the question is that legal? Is it constitutional? Arizona has been the first to sue. The Republican National Committee, as an employer, says they're going to sue as soon as it's issued. But I think that's a bad look. I think it shouldn't be so politicized. But anyway, they're going to sue. Mike Lindell says he has 1,700 employees. So in his role as as an employer is going to sue. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are going to sue. I don't know how to say his name, Arizona, Brnovich, the Attorney General of Arizona, who's also running for Senate, he filed the first lawsuit as a complaint for declaratory relief. And there's been tons of discussion about whether or not this is constitutional. And, of course, so that depends on what it means. And, unfortunately, this is some of the things here are what caused me to burn, you know, have steam coming out of my ear for the entire 4 years I went to night law school, because this kind of stuff is just nonsense. And it's just so my entire feeling was like, how in the world could anybody take this seriously? It is so blatantly hypocritical, and the courts say the law is anything we want it to say.
Mm-hmm.
But how does this work? There's a lot of reasons why this is problematic, and that means that it should be thrown out. But you know, who knows what the courts are going to do? Basically, we want to talk about strict scrutiny and these things.
Yeah, well, here's how this came about. Just to make it clear for people, there was, some of these mandates, they're coming out. The courts are saying, and the people are saying, and the lawyers are saying, even had a constitutional expert on One American News said, if there's a compelling state interest, they can limit your rights. If they use strict scrutiny, in other words, they use very specific criteria in determining their compelling state interest, they can restrict your rights. And my contention is that's total BS. Okay, you can't ever restrict anybody's rights. That's why we have a constitution. The time the constitution's most needed is when the government wants to restrict your rights. So the idea that the court can use precedent and override the constitution is completely bogus. You know, so what I wanted to really do was make it clear, you know, as clear as possible, and ask you to just outline this is a bogus thing. They're making this stuff up. They're using the quote interpretations, which they have no right to do. Courts can use the statutes, they can use the Constitution, they can use the statutes, but they cannot make stuff up and then use that as a precedent to make more stuff up. You can't Well, there's no justification for limiting rights. I don't care what the emergency. Nuclear war, you know, mass plague, we still have our constitutional rights. That's when you need your constitutional rights the most, because the government uses that as an excuse to do anything, or they'll declare an emergency for no reason. We would always be in an emergency if the government could do that, so they could say, well, we're in an emergency. We can restrict your rights. BS. That's why I asked you the question. Starting with compelling state interest. Yeah. Go ahead.
And they have been making it up, and it's as much as anybody will understand about these things, mm-hmm. it's worse. You know, however much I or others make people understand it, trust me, it's worse than you think. They have been making it up for 200 years. Well, actually, the worst of it came from the court packing scheme of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Is we really did change our Constitution after that, because mm-hmm. the Supreme Court had a gun to its head, which should make it all invalid. But anyway, so the thing is basically you don't have any rights. Unless the Supreme Court decides that some rights it's going to make fundamental rights, and other rights it's going to ignore or give slight attention to. And so the question over time has been whether or not certain rights are elevated above other rights. And that makes no sense, but that's the way it is. And then there are rights that are only applicable to the federal courts, or whether it's recognized through the 14th Amendment to also cover the states and local government. So we start out with a bunch of just arbitrary nonsense that, you know, there are some rights that matter and some rights that don't. Mm-hmm. And there are some rights that you have against the federal government, and there are some rights you have against any government. Why? Well, reading the Constitution, you wouldn't know that. You can only hear it from the priesthood. So what they do is that the fundamental rights that are recognized as being the most serious,
mm-hmm.
Like the First Amendment, for a long time not the Second Amendment. One of the big things about the decision, the Heller decision in D.C. was that it mm-hmm. recognized almost, you know, clearly, the Second Amendment as being on the same high level as the First Amendment. And in order to regulate something that infringes upon a fundamental right,
mm-hmm.
they apply strict. Now, you won't
that's
find
wrong.
Strict scrutiny.
This is where I start screaming and pulling my hair out, because they can't do that. Yeah. They make this stuff up. You know, they even with the Second Amendment, they said, well, there's two separate rights. There's the right inside the home to have a gun, and there's the right outside the home to have a gun. That's purely made up. Nothing in the Constitution ever says that your rights are any different outside your home as inside. You know,
well,
this is kind of crazy stuff the courts are doing. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's why I did a slow burn all through high school, through law school. Because this is the way it's done. So if they decide that a particular right is entitled to strict scrutiny, and it's pick and choose, then the government must have a compelling state interest, and must apply a regulation that is narrowly tailored
mm-hmm.
to achieve that interest. So it must be the least restrictive means.
Right.
If
they're justifying their illegal action by doing it the best way possible.
No, it has to.
Does that make sense?
Well, they're saying that in order for it to pass muster, there must be no other way to achieve the compelling state interest.
Yeah, see, but that's wrong. It can never pass muster. No restrictions on our rights can ever pass muster, because there's no way to do that. There's no power in the Constitution, or I'm sure the state constitutions, you know, I don't know about all the states, but there's certainly nothing in the federal Constitution that gives the court jurisdiction over restricting rights. It doesn't exist. The whole point of the rights is that rights are absolute with context of the right. And I've gone over this on the show. This is my legal doctrine, all right? But it makes sense to me, and hopefully it would make sense to everybody else out there, that the reason we have when the First Amendment says you have a right to free speech, you can yell fire in a crowded theater. Now, there might be consequences, okay, like a bunch of people get really mad at you and, you know, you might have problems. But the fact is, the Constitution does not restrict you from doing that. The Constitution does not restrict you from you know, putting 50 AK-47s on your shoulder if they'll fit and walking down the street. You can own and carry anything you want. Mm-hmm. But where the context of the right ends is the use. In the same way here, this idea that these people can sit there and say, well, we're the government. You know, so it gets back to Marbury versus Madison. Government agencies, in other words, the courts, making up their own power and then making up doctrine from that. They can't do it. They can't make up regulations for made-up powers. The court can't make up policies for made-up powers. You know, you can't do it. And the Congress is duty-bound to rein this stuff in. They should immediately abolish compelling state interest as a legal doctrine. That's how I would handle it.
Well, it's not the compelling state interest, because that's where they have – I mean, it's not the right word, because they have to show that they have a compelling state. It's the strict scrutiny analysis that says it's okay to infringe on rights if there's a compelling state interest.
And I'm saying it's not okay.
The problem is that most rights don't even get that much respect. Mm-hmm. Most rights are a lower standard, mm-hmm. Heightened scrutiny, if they call it. And mm-hmm. and that is I should have gotten the exact phrasing.
That's okay.
That's a lower level. Lower level of scrutiny when they can, for them to be able to regulate your
life. Well, that's Gene.
And the vast
Gene, she can get a Gene. If you have a second, can you look up the definition of heightened scrutiny as opposed to strict scrutiny? That really helps out. There's plenty, like the Cornell has a law dictionary. I think Notre Dame has, or just put it up there. The law things pop up really fast. I've looked them up myself.
Okay, you want heightened scrutiny versus what?
Jonathan, what is it? Is it called heightened scrutiny? We'll get a definition of it. Is that what you're looking for?
Oh, yes. Scrutiny.
Heightened scrutiny, yeah. Okay.
Or it goes by several different names. That's one of them.
Okay.
Thanks, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jonathan, you're breaking up a little bit. We're missing some words occasionally. So if I ask you to repeat something, that's why. Because I want to make sure that we get this. But the whole idea.
But that's why I was going to look something up there. But the point is that the vast majority.
We have the best resource in the world. We got
Gene. Lower level.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. And the lower level of respect, which is called rational basis.
Okay.
Which most rights can be regulated
mm-hmm.
if the court is convinced that the regulation is not insane. Some people have jokingly said that a jury, they talk about whether a non-insane jury could have rationally come to this conclusion. If there's any rational basis for mm-hmm. the Congress or the state legislature right. to regulate your rights, the courts will let them.
But the jury shouldn't.
It depends upon whether they have decided that certain juries. Rights are quite.
Yeah. But the jury
right,
well, should.
But I'm just saying that.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying that they're like they talk about the irrational jury test. There is sort of an irrational legislature test, which is that and the thing is whether your rights are entitled to these three different levels of protection
mm-hmm.
is pretty much just because the court says so.
Yeah.
And so there are rights in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That are decided to have low levels of protection. There are some rights that have never been decided. Rights, of course, that don't.
Yeah.
Well, they just never got around to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some rights where they don't exist, but they, like, for example, the right to an abortion doesn't exist in the Constitution. They just made it up, but they've given it, actually, many commentators have said they've made it a super right because it's more than strict scrutiny. It's like if it's absolutely anything, if it stops anybody from getting from even thinking about getting an abortion, it's automatically an illegal regulation. So, because it's not just Roe v. Wade, it's all kinds of other things like if people are dying from an abortion. I did an internship at ACLJ that included mm-hmm. that where I did a study of injuries and fatalities in abortion mm-hmm. clinics and in the law and so you know, even reasonable measures saying you have to have clean instruments, like nope, you can't do it. You have to, you know, you have to at least, you know, you have to have a doctor affiliated with a hospital. Nope. So the rights, even rights that don't actually exist, mm-hmm. they rank them and decide how they're going to protect them. Whereas other ones, like for example, the right against unreasonable search and seizure. The only thing they'll get say is they'll suppress the evidence. Well, that's not much of a protection.
Yeah.
You know, if they search somebody's home illegally without a warrant, they don't do anything except to say, oh, if you can't use that evidence. You know, they don't say this is blatantly illegal. It's blatantly unconstitutional. It cannot be tolerated. So it depends on how they decide.
Yeah. But the problem is the courts have elevated themselves to a position above the Constitution, above the legislatures, and above the executives, both at the presidential and governor level. Jean, did you get a definition in there? I thought I heard you.
Yes, I did. It's a standard of evaluation that the United States judges must meet in certain kinds of cases when a policy, a rule, or a law is brought to the court by someone who wishes to challenge it. It's one of three levels of scrutiny, and it's also known as intermediate scrutiny. And the lower level is the rational basis test, while the highest is strict scrutiny. When the judges review laws, they must consider whether they serve the interests of the country while also balancing the need to protect civil liberties.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Jonathan, I need to talk about that. So they have this test where they balance, you know, the compelling government interest over civil liberties. That's a bogus comparison.
Yeah.
Their job is always to protect civil liberties. Their job is, you know,
right.
And here's the problem with the government giving the government powers. You know, it's not we the people giving the government powers. The government is saying what our rights are. And they, this is where I'm saying they're making this stuff up. They're creating tests. They're balancing things that have no need to be balanced. There is no compelling state interest beyond protecting our individual rights. That's the whole reason they exist. You know, this is why I'm so galled by this whole thing. And all these things need to be thrown out. You know, legislatures need to get it. But this is why I'm against judicial review. This really comes down to judicial review, where the judiciary thinks that they mm-hmm. have the power to sort of give their stamp of approval on it. Gene, thank you very much. I appreciate the definitions. But here's, you know, when like I say, it always goes, you know, the only things that they can do, all right, the only things that and I've talked to Jim Dykes about this. We've had, you know, arguments back and forth. The only thing, and I'll say a good use of judicial review is what happened with the New York judge that suspended the state of New York's mandates, the vaccine mandates. That's good because they did it in favor. And the reason is Judge Hurd, he did it because there were no religious exemptions to the law. Okay, so that's a good thing. Now, he can't then go and make policy and say, well, here's what the vax mandate can be, you know, if you do this. That would be into judicial review, which is unconstitutional. But because he just did what judges can do, which say this policy is unconstitutional, that's it. He's acting properly, okay? But the minute they get beyond that, this is where it gets nuts. And this idea that the judges can judge, you know, the balance between civil rights, public safety, or they have to, or they have the ability to act in the public good. No, they don't. This is a country based on individual law and individual rights, and anything to the contrary is unconstitutional. That goes against what we stand for. So these courts have created, this is why I want to talk about it. These courts have created this situation where they give themselves power. They use that power. They justify that power. They make precedents out of that power. And none of it is real. None of it is legal. None of it is constitutional. Yet it goes on because people believe it. This is why we need to educate juries.
Right.
Now ACLJ, American Center for Law and Justice, I just want to make sure people understand that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
and then there's FEJA. And I want to get FEJA back, the Fully Informed Jury Association. Juries are supposed to check the power of judges. But if they're not instructed correctly, if they don't know they have the power of jury nullification, then this crap keeps going through. That's, I think, where the real secret
right.
is to get juries educated to that there is no compelling state interest. That's not something that the judiciary can judge. It's another damn business. Jonathan.
Right. So we So Der Fuhrer, Joe Biden, Hail Biden, or, you know, Zeke Heil Biden, declared that on his own authority
mm-hmm.
that employees must get vaccinated in companies that have 100 or more employees. Mm-hmm. And he also, they're also saying that if a, if an institution like retirement home or something like that takes Medicare dollars, that everybody on the staff has to get vaccinated. That's clearly unconstitutional or illegal.
Yeah.
Because Medicare acts as an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not federally funded. The members who go to a facility get their, you know, get a reimbursement in their name like an insurance company. It's a government insurance company. So just because the user has, you know, has their bills paid by Medicare does not give Medicare the authority to regulate, you know, the employees, not even what kind of services the institution provides, but the employees of the institution. So that's illegal. But the issue is first of all, that within the federal government,
mm-hmm.
the president does not have that authority. Now, many times, you know, the president is using delegated authority from the Congress, which is way too sloppy all the time and has massive holes in that. But then you run into the non-delegation doctrine, which,
what's
again,
that?
All of these things, they apply them when they feel like it, and they don't, and they look the other way when they feel like it. But the non-delegation doctrine basically says that Congress makes the laws, the president does not. And the same thing is true at state levels. The president,
and the courts,
like
the courts do not. That's the other thing, too. The courts do not make laws.
Well, that should be, too, but it's specifically usually applied. So,
okay.
So when a president makes a law, you know, makes an interpretation or whatever, it has to be where Congress has given them that authority. Like, for example, if you say, you know, Congress must certify, or the president must certify that X country is not, you know, is making progress to fight terrorism, or they don't get the money. The president mm-hmm. then has the authority to figure that out, declare, and activate the law that Congress passed.
Mm-hmm.
But the president cannot make up the law. And
Congress can do
so
oversight
within the
too.
Federal government.
You know, Congress can give the power in the law, and they can do oversight to make mm-hmm. sure the law is complied with in the letter and the spirit
as they
passed it. Yeah. So I'm just saying, but that's part of
right.
it. That's part,
and
of the, that's part of the process, and that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, because the president is right. not using his inherent authority if he has an interpretation or something like that. The legislative authority rests in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
But between the states and the federal government, the states have, I mean, again, as you've pointed out, the states created the government, mm-hmm. created the United States of America and the federal government, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
The states are not administrative districts of the federal government.
Yeah.
So the states have power that the federal government doesn't. Now, where the federal government has power, legitimately, it is the supreme law of the land. Where it doesn't have power, it has no power at all. You know, in topics and scope and areas where the federal government is not authorized to do anything,
mm-hmm.
its power is null and void. It's zero.
One of those being public health, for those that are interested. Public health is an area that
yeah.
is not mentioned in the Constitution.
They have no
jurisdiction.
Traditionally things,
you know. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, and traditionally things like but basically schools and
mm-hmm.
divorces
education.
And all kinds of things like that are state issues.
Education,
yes, because we have a U.S. Department. We have a U.S. Department of Education bank
mm-hmm.
where I used to work. Where they're doing what they're supposed to do, they're just a bank. They just give out money. They don't. They are not. You know, people think that the U.S. Department of Education runs schools. All they do is write checks.
Yeah.
They're not. They have no authority really to do mm-hmm. anything with regard to schools, except, you know, here's a check if you think that would help you.
Well, those are coercive
and so
checks
a lot
too,
of things,
because there are conditions on those checks. You will teach critical race theory.
Yes, there are.
You will. You know, that's where their power comes from.
Right, but
right.
they do not have – the federal government does not have inherent authority over schools or public health.
Or the FBI.
For example,
there's
we
no
have this,
national police force either. You know, the list could go – we could do this all day, but yeah. Yeah.
The Federal Bureau of Imagination, my brother is a harsh critic. He says they've never been anything more than a PR machine, way back to the very beginning. So even between the federal government and the states, it's not even though Congress would have to pass this law, and there may be some laws where they can argue that, well, the president is acting under this law or that law. It's a real stretch. It's never been done before. And of course, the problem is, for those who may say, well, what's the big deal? You're going to get vaccinated. They're never going to stop, obviously. If they can, that's the whole thing with Obamacare. If they can force you to buy a product or service,
mm-hmm.
they can force you to do anything. And it's the same totalitarian. I mean, let's call it what it is. It's tyranny. And the thing is, so we go back to this Supreme Court thing in 1905, which would take, you know, a weekend, a couple of seminar to pick it apart. It's so horrible. It's got to be the worst written Supreme Court decision until Roe versus Wade, which is recognized as a pretty horrible, legally inadequate, legally defective, legally ridiculous opinion. But also obsolete in many, many ways. It reads like something off the Huffington Post, the Supreme Court's decision in 1905 in Jacobson versus Massachusetts. But that was where Massachusetts was doing the regulating. Mm-hmm. And it was acknowledged that the state had general police power, that the federal government doesn't. And there were so many other problems with it. For example, one thing you got to watch for is that they say that the Jacobson failed to come forward with evidence that he had, you know, that he had he would be harmed. He made claims, that he had been harmed by vaccinations in the past, and his son also had. So it's a, you know, it's a hereditary condition. But he didn't come back forward with enough evidence. So they ignored the idea of whether there were exceptions for people who shouldn't get it. But they go through this whole thing that the rights of the individual should not stop the will of the majority. That's our whole Constitution.
Exactly.
One of the geniuses of our system that is widely acknowledged is almost a cliche. Is that individual rights do stand up to the majority? The majority, mm-hmm. Now this is difficult, but the idea that
There's no balance.
We have a contra.
Really?
It's very difficult, but we have a contra majoritarian constitution. It's well recognized by all the great scholars, especially on the left, that the Constitution says even if you have a majority, there are certain things you can't do. And so this Supreme Court decision was absolutely horrendous, because it's completely opposite. You know, it's the old thing, and it's an unpleasant example, but it's a gripping example. But if you have a society of 100 men and 90 women, and the 100 men vote to rape the 90 women, that would be a majority vote. That's why a constitutional republic is not a democracy. It says there are certain things you cannot do. You have, on the one hand, the government doesn't have the authority to try to do it. On the other hand, it is blocked by trampling on fundamental rights. So, you know, first you ask, is this authority to exist to begin with? And no, Biden does not have the authority. And the second is, does it trample on people's rights? Yes, it does. And the perfect example of that is Griswold v. Connecticut. In 1905, the right of privacy had not been discovered by the U.S. Supreme Court, and abortion. Yeah, they didn't know about.
They hadn't made it up
in
yet.
The dark back then.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Well, literally, yes. And so it says that, and this is the whole thing with gay marriage and gay rights and laws against sodomy, the Lawrence v. Texas, and all these developments are all based on the idea that there is a zone of privacy. That even if the government has the power, and even if they've always done it, we're going to declare that there is a zone of privacy in which the government cannot invade. And so what you do in your bedroom, whether you buy contraceptives, the U.S. Supreme Court has said, there is a sphere of, you know, a shield of, you know, whatever, like in Star Trek. There's an area in which the government its power ends.
But this is such a contradiction, though. The whole idea of vaccine mandates contradicts what they're talking about, because that violates every principle they said. So for convenience, it was very convenient in Roe v. Wade to say that, you know, that this is a privacy issue, but it's really not, because you've got three people involved. You know, you've got a child, a baby, a developing baby, you've got a father, and you've got a mother. So the idea that one person can make the decision for three people is unconstitutional on its face, and that's never talked about either. You know, you're depriving, you know, you've got one person depriving life and liberty, literally life, you know, for another person and liberty for another person, you know, because fathers don't have a choice.
Right, but today, as opposed to a ninth, this is why I say it's obsolete and it's badly written, because today, the 1905 case, if they were to argue for vaccination of those who don't want it, they would be threatening the entire mountain of Roe versus Wade and everything associated with it. It is absolutely in contradiction to the right of privacy.
See what happens when you make things up? You have to make up more things up to counter the things that you made previously. You know, it's like a lie.
As your mom used to tell you, once you start lying, yes, exactly. As your mom's everywhere have said, once you start to lie, you have to keep lying to cover up the previous lies.
Yep.
I'm not saying this is a lie. I'm just using the well-known example. I'm not saying that, I mean, they're errors, but I'm not saying they're lying. I'm just saying that they made something up out of the Constitution in 1964, about 1963, I think it was. I'm talking about Griswold versus Connecticut.
Oh, Griswold, okay, 64, okay.
Which is the basis of Roe versus Wade.
Okay.
that was where they said that Connecticut cannot prohibit people from buying contraceptives. And it's the same, you know, bodily, you know, privacy issues and those things that they use throughout. And that's how they threw out laws against sodomy. I think more birth control would be better than more abortion, but I'm just saying this is how the analysis goes. So in order to now say that 1905 is still good law, they have to threaten Griswold v. Connecticut, gay rights, gay marriage, abortion, and everything like that. And they have to look like, confront the fact that the 1905 Jacobson v. Massachusetts case reads like a teenager's article in the high school newspaper.
Okay.
It's just so bad, and it keeps repeating over and over. It's so awful. Go ahead.
Well, I've been arguing for a long time that our Fourth Amendment protections, you know, against, you know, unreasonable searches and seizures, that if you're forced to have a vaccine, that is a seizure. That is a seizure of your body. The government is seizing you, mandating that you inject something into your body, which is going to make a permanent change. You know, you've got messenger RNA that will permanently change the instructions to your DNA, and that they have no right to do that as a mandate. Now, I wouldn't stop anybody from getting one, even though I think it's, you know, insane from what I've learned from various people. But I wouldn't stop anybody from doing it, just like I wouldn't stop people from smoking who want to smoke, even though we all know there's nothing good that comes from it. But in the same way, that's what individual rights are all about. You do have the right to be stupid, as long as you're not killing other people in the process of what you're doing. You know, so that's where the rights go. But this idea that they can, you know, they can seize your body, and this, I don't know if anybody's using this argument. You know, and there is a privacy aspect too, because we have the right to be secure in our persons, homes, papers, and effects. That's right there in the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment. I think it's Fourth Amendment. But the point is, it's right there, and that never comes out. You know, you get these arguments for a compelling state interest, and if they use strict scrutiny or intermediate scrutiny or the rationality test, it's okay, because, you know, they've used a test to make sure it's okay to do. So they're testing something that they have no right to do because they made it up to justify something that they have no right to do because they made it up. I mean, it's the lie on top of the lie on top of the lie, and this is what drives me so crazy, because I don't hear Fourth Amendment arguments against these vaccine mandates. They say there's procedure things. You know, I got Dershowitz here. I got the article. You know, Jack Phillips wrote this. And we got to Claire on the line, who I'm going to bring her on just a little bit here. Epoch Times,
September 12th. Courts will rule against Biden on vaccine mandate penalties, Alan Dershowitz. Now, here's a contradiction. He says courts will likely agree that the federal government has the authority to enforce COVID-19 vaccine mandates. I disagree with that. But will argue that the rules and penalties cannot be enforced. Well, what the hell does that mean, Dershowitz? How can you agree that the mandates are okay, but the penalties are not? That's an irrational contradiction, as most contradictions are. Jonathan?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, but the problem is the lawsuits have just gotten started. Now,
oh, okay.
Arizona's...
Oh, where'd you go? Coming back. This is just getting good. Jonathan.
Where everybody's going to bring
okay,
all kinds
that.
Of different claims.
Stop back with the states. You cut out just for a second when you're talking about the state lawsuits, because this is really interesting. So what's going on with the states? I mean, just back
well,
up
I'm
for,
saying
for
the lawsuits have just gotten started, and
okay.
the Arizona state lawsuit is about equal protection. They're
oh.
suing under the Equal Protection Clause.
So how does that fit
illegal
in?
Aliens are not – they're saying that illegal aliens flooding across Arizona's border
right.
are not required to be vaccinated, but people who are here legally do have to get vaccinated. So they're taking that tack, and there's going to be many, many lawsuits taking many, many different approaches.
See, but that doesn't make sense either, because the vaccine itself is still a violation of your person. You know, it's a seizure. And so if illegal aliens were suddenly vaccinated, first of all, they can't be here anyway. So why would you vaccinate people that can't be here? That doesn't make sense. All right. But even if you did vaccinate them and then said, well, okay, now we're equally protecting people, that doesn't make sense either. So what you equally – so the equal protection is the fact that everybody has the equal protection not to get this. That's where equal protection
right.
is.
Well,
it's not
well,
if you
I'm
if you do it to some people, you can do it to others. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I'm sure that people will get, you know, I certainly hope someone will figure out what you're saying and will follow that approach.
Well, they need to listen to our
show. There'll be many, many lawsuits.
Yeah, we fix this stuff all the time.
I'm just saying there'll be many, many lawsuits taking many, many different angles.
Yeah. I'm going to hold you up for a second. I got Claire on the line, and I wanted to – we have a new sponsor
right.
who actually is our webmaster. So I want to quickly tell folks here – let me see if I get my – I should have had my text up ahead of time. Where is my – oh, I can't believe I didn't have it ready. Here we go. All right. So this is Eric Cawley. That's E-R-I-C-C-A-W-L-E-Y, who has already improved our Write Your Laws page. And we even have categories now for Australian, Canadian, British, and New Zealand legislation. So we're already expanding. I'm in chat groups in Australia. And so Action Radio is going to be going crazy. Anyway, to help you with your small business marketing, Eric Cawley offers proven cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google page one. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive. And this is the good part, advertising. If you want to contact Eric Cawley, it's 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. And you can reach him at eric@besmallbusiness.com, E-R-A-C, at B-E-S-M-A-L-L-B-U-S-I-N-E-S-S.com, eric@smallbusiness.com, or check his website, besmallbusiness.com. There we go. Claire, good morning. Action Radio is growing.
Good morning, all.
I know it's not your area, but the whole idea of mandates in the Constitution and individual rights, the things that we fight for that our military even fights in other countries for. do you want to get on this discussion here? Because this is incredible.
Fascinating discussion, but I'm going to leave it to the legal eagles on that one.
Okay, that's you, Jonathan. Back to you. We'll make sure we cover this thoroughly. A bunch of stuff for Claire, too. We're such a busy morning this morning. Let's see if I had anything else for Jonathan. Have we covered? You wanted to cover?
Surprise.
What's that?
I think we got, yeah, for now. I think maybe we'll go through this whole 1905 case in detail, why it's so amateurish and horrific. But,
well, let's
see
next week, because...
Written,
Well, I want to do that next week. The idea of a statement – see, here's the thing, too. Even though the states do have police powers, the idea that the states can violate your constitutional rights and the federal government can't makes no sense to me, because the 14th Amendment said that state law has to have the same standard as federal law when it comes to searches and seizures. And if it's a seizure under federal law, it's a seizure under state law, too. There's no great, wonderful change in the definition when it becomes state law, right?
But still, the Supreme Court picks and chooses which rights it's going to apply to against the states and which is not. So which makes no sense, but now, you know, but the thing is I can't believe that I managed to get through several years of my, you know, my head burnt, my brain exploding in law school into this, but I think that's a quick overview. And like I say, it's the kind of thing that It's not like a continuation, but people may have to hear it several times before. It's deep stuff. I mean, this is a deep dive into the. This is not a quick discussion.
We're going to continue this next week. Yeah.
If it makes your blood boil, then you. Let me just say this: if it makes your blood boil, then you're getting it.
Yeah, you're coming to the right place to hear this, too. So I want to thank both of you, as always, Jonathan and Claire. You make Thursdays unbelievable, and I love having you both here. Speaking of deep dives, let's go deep into the mind of Anthony Blinken, that reservoir of incredible geopolitical strategy, Joe Biden's, aide for 20 years. And let's find out what the hell happened during the hearings in Congress. Why did they do it? What are they going to do from it? You know, he was humiliated, embarrassed. He looks like an arrogant idiot, and took, he tried to take responsibility, but not the blame, it's like the old Watergate thing. Well, I'm responsible, but it's not my fault. Claire, can you explain what happened, please?
Well, I have to apologize. I have been traveling this week. I missed the hearings completely.
Okay.
And I only have a very few minutes before I have to jump off because I'm traveling home today, actually, and I'm going to be picked up shortly.
Well, in that case, whatever you want to talk about, feel free.
I apologize. I did not get to hear the hearings at all or watch.
Okay. Well, that's fine. But, listen, if you have limited time, just, whenever you have to go, that's fine. I'll just leave it to you then to bring up what you think is the most important issue in foreign policy and intelligence then for this week. And then we shall, Jonathan, we're going to get back to you at some point here, it sounds like. Claire, what's going on? I mean, I got ideas for you.
Been a little bit away from things.
Okay. Well,
I spoke to one audience about the Middle East, about Afghanistan, of course, and getting our heads around the idea that we're probably looking at lead up to more attacks, certainly more Islamic jihad attacks.
Yeah.
And then I spoke to another group about the threat of China to the United States security.
Yeah. Well, here's something you may know about. Australia is getting nuclear submarines now. And I think Britain is helping out. Yeah. Canada's helping out. I think we're helping out to a certain extent, although, knowing Biden, probably not as much as we should. Do you see that as a way to sort of shift the balance a little bit?
Well, it sounds all to the good to me. Of course, Australia is a member of the Quad, so-called.
Right.
That is the grouping of India and Australia. Japan and the United States, which is formed to enhance security of all of us out in, the East Asia area, and in particular vis-a-vis the communist Chinese.
Did Trump do anything to advance the Quad? Because I don't remember hearing much about that in the news.
Well, he certainly enhanced our bilateral relationship, for example, with India. I remember a very warm visit to India and bilateral talks with Narendra Modi between him and President Trump. So, yeah, I would say he did try to advance the ties among the Quad countries. Yeah.
Is anything happening with that now? I'm guessing no. Certainly from our end.
No. I mean, except for this submarine idea, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let me, if you get a chance, like I say, I've got some of the testimony from the hearing of Blinken. And first of all, you have no need to apologize. I just like having you here. So, there are other things in the world besides Action Radio. So it's no problem at all. But what happened was when I was watching this, he was stumbling. He was humiliated. He didn't know the answers. He couldn't explain anything.
Oh, boy.
It's like these people are so arrogant and so, they're almost proud of their arrogance. But then when anybody actually questions them.
It's not just arrogance. These people are just simply not qualified. They're not terribly bright. One of the things I was talking about to my audience when I was speaking about the China threat, I mentioned that, out of a population today of something like 1.4 billion people in China, of course, that's going off a cliff, but at the moment it's around that number.
Yeah.
The top leadership, the people who make it to the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party, and certainly the leader of the Chinese Communist Party today, Xi Jinping, these are the cream of the crop, the tippy tip of the brightest people out of 1.4 billion people. And how that happens is that students begin to be tracked at quite a young age, as to which direction they're headed to go in. And certainly by the time of the university exams, the real divisions begin to be made, seriously, as to who will get into the good, the best universities, and then from there, who has the chance to get into the best jobs and so forth. And so by the time you've got somebody like a Xi Jinping or any of his top ministers, you know, in the positions they're in of leadership in China, you are talking about people who have not associated with anyone whose IQ is below about 150 since they were 10 years old. They are in an elite company and have been, and it's hugely competitive, or they wouldn't be where they are. And the point is that they get to those positions because they are the brightest of the bright. I mean, I'm talking 150, 160 IQ and up, okay?
Yep.
And then we have Anthony Blinken.
You know, where he is because he worked with Joe Biden for 20 years. You know, I can pretty much guarantee that. You know, he didn't know about the button that somebody has that can stop Biden from speaking. He, he had no plan for getting, you know, Americans out. He had no explanation why, you know, 100,000 Afghani stowaways were taken out and why they're being, quote, resettled when they're supposed to be refugees and they should have gone to the closest country available. In fact, I'm not even sure what the closest country available would be. Would it be Saudi Arabia or India, or where would the normal refugees?
Well, many refugees from Afghanistan years past have gone to places like Pakistan and also Iran.
Okay, which is not great, but at least, you know, but if you're a Sharia Taliban person, then it makes sense to go there. But they didn't have to come here. Were there a lot of folks that went there from this, or did they were all herded into our airplanes to come here?
I don't know. But we're going to regret this. I mean, as I told other audiences, I've been speaking to a number of groups this past week or so.
Mm-hmm.
The advance party for the next 9/11 could already be on American soil.
See, and this is where, you know, we disagree a little bit in the fact that I believe these are purposeful. And I know you hold more with the idea that these people are idiots. And I think I find that, you know, I was talking to Jonathan about this earlier. When Biden gets up and talks about the Taliban, he says Taliban exactly the way Obama says Taliban, which means he's been listening to Obama directly. You know, with his mental state, he's repeating, not only is he repeating what he's heard, he's repeating the exact inflection of what he's heard. This is how I know Obama's behind most of what's happening here. And given Obama's hatred for this country, it makes sense to me that he brought in the Somali community in Mogadishu, you know, little Mogadishu up in Minnesota, that's caused nothing but vote fraud problems, and Ilhan Omar, who should probably not only be out of Congress, but she should have her citizenship stripped as well. And we're going to have a little Afghanistan. We're going to have a little cabal. You know, literally, probably spelled C-B-A-L. You know, we're going to have a little cabal somewhere, you know, in our country of these Afghanis that have no right to be here. At the same time, they've left Americans at home. That's purposeful. I don't believe that's an accident. You know, I believe that Obama is building the Taliban nation. You want to talk about nation building? He built them with all those arms. And I think a lot of them, I've heard a lot of them are ended up in Iran. And yet, even though they made a mistake, there's been no effort by Congress or anybody to even get them back or destroy them. You know, yes, I mean, I understand mistakes do get made, even, you know, although I don't think this is why I think it's purposeful. But even the worst mistake, there's usually something you can do to do something to make it less of a mistake. And yet no efforts were made to do anything to bring those weapons back, you know, or destroy them, which means this is how I know it's on purpose. You know, because all these actions, you look at the actions, you look at the motivations, you look at what's actually being done, and I look at it through the eyes that this is purposeful, and everything makes sense. They're building Afghanistan to be a Sharia state. We talked about the 2004 Constitution, you know, that the State Department wrote, which I'm sure Blinken had some kind of a hand in, or at least, you know, people ilk of that, you know, mentality, you know, so there's nothing to win.
Noah
the game
Feldman
was rigged.
And Elena Kagan, current Justice of the Supreme Court, formerly of Harvard University.
Yeah, so Elena Kagan should be on the stand.
And a larger team.
Yeah, so those are the folks
and
that should be before Congress.
And led by Zalmay Khalilzad, the ambassador.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's this the American ambassador to Afghanistan?
Yes, at the time.
That last
and then
person?
Also to the talks in Doha as well.
Okay. So where is he now?
Well, I guess back home again. Yeah.
Home being the United States or home being Afghanistan?
Oh,
he's American.
States. He's an American ambassador.
Okay, all right. So I just want to make sure. I don't know if he represented their government or our government. If he represents our government,
well,
then,
neither do we. But nevertheless, he's an American ambassador.
Okay, well that's fine. I just want to, but you know, I want to know. I'm curious. I want to just, you know, isolate where he is and where, you know, what he's doing, because a lot of the times these people, it's what they do after their government job that sometimes is more interesting when they go into private, you know, practice, private, you know, lobbying firms, things like that. So I was just curious. You know where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I'm trying to think of a good example, but like the former commissioner of Health and Human Services, or FDA, is now in Big Pharma. What a surprise! You know, he's already done the good things.
Yeah.
You know, for his company, for his future job. So I'm just wondering if our American ambassador to Afghanistan was doing things for his future job. Just curious.
I don't know where exactly he was fetched up.
Okay.
Right now, I don't know.
All right, let's talk about the anniversary of the Abraham Accords. Did you have something else? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Well, actually, no. I.
You got to go.
Huge apologies. I have to run.
Oh, that's
I have
fine.
To jump.
I'll have these questions next week.
My ride is coming, and I am going home today. Finally.
Okay. Well, have a wonderful trip.
Very much apologize for the abbreviated presence here today, but I'll be back next week.
Sounds good. I'll have the same questions. We'll be fine. We'll see what else happens this week.
Okay. We'll continue to be continued.
Thank you, Claire. Have
all
a wonderful
right.
trip
right.
home.
Thanks, okay. Rick. Thank you all very right. much. Okay.
Bye-bye. All right. Goodbye now. There we go. All right. So I'm going to take this opportunity to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for this week, which is part two of my discussion of the Articles of Confederation. And then, Jonathan, take a break for a couple minutes if you want to, you know, mute yourself. I think you've heard this. If you haven't heard, then you know, certainly welcome to listen and comment as well. And then we've got some more time to catch up and either discuss that case that you talked about, or what I think might be interesting also is the case of this landlord who was trying to throw people out of his apartment complex in Florida if they're not vaccinated. Speaking of little dictatorships, that's how that works. Anyway, so let me play this piece. It's about 7 minutes long, and then we'll be back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. In our last episode, we covered the first three of the Articles of Confederation articles and discovered that the states had a built-in firm league of friendship with each other, which I believe the Federalists thought got in the way of all their power being centered in the federal government and away from any state compacts. That's why the Constitution left this principle out. Article 4 carries this mutual state friendship even further when it starts out saying, "The better to secure and perpetuate mutual friendship and intercourse among the people of the different states in this union, the free inhabitants of each of these states, paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice excepted, shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of free citizens of the several states." This part of the Articles of Confederation wasn't put into the Constitution until after the Civil War with the 14th Amendment, and even then, there was no mutual state friendship pact included. Given the war between the Confederacy and the Union, this is understandable. Again, as with the ratification of the Constitution, there was to be isolation of the states from the states. Mutual friendship and intercourse among the people of the different states means trade and travel, something we were told was difficult under the Articles of Confederation, which I now believe was a lie in order to break any mutual state friendship, connection, agreements, support, or for any reason that might threaten federal supremacy in the new Constitution, without of course saying so openly. Also interesting is that Article 4 contains the phrase, "the free inhabitants of each of these states, paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice excepted," which means that privileges and immunities, mutual friendship and intercourse, were for free people. Free meaning free of crime and dependence. This is fascinating because nowhere does the Constitution I know of single out paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice and openly make them unqualified for constitutional rights. The closest the Constitution comes is the Fifth Amendment, which says no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, which means everyone, regardless of being paupers, vagabonds, or fugitives from justice, have all their rights automatically unless due process of law takes them away. However, the Articles of Confederation reversed the assumption that everyone has constitutional rights until denied by due process of law and declares that only free people are entitled to privileges and immunities in the Articles of Confederation before they get their rights. This was a real problem for the Articles of Confederation because there could be no presumption of innocence for people who weren't qualified for rights to begin with, and it violates the Declaration of Independence that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. The Constitution was right to change this article. However, there is one very interesting thing we can learn from this. Many, including me, do not believe that people on government welfare, not Social Security, Medicare, or pensions, but working-age people on welfare should not be able to vote because they are able to vote themselves more of other people's money, and politicians who give them more welfare can count on their vote. So in that respect, I believe the exclusion of paupers, as defined by my online dictionary as a recipient of government relief or public charity from voting on other people's money, would be correct. Should vagabonds have the right to vote? A vagabond is, by dictionary definition, a person who wanders from place to place without a home or job. This gives rise to the idea, in part, that the Constitution was written for white men with property, because they paid taxes and had a stake in the community. Although I've never seen anything like this written in any founding document, which means it probably is a modern prejudice against white men or people who have acquired property. Since it is necessary to have a physical address and lawful ID to vote, vagabonds might not be eligible to even register to vote. But that should not prevent the wandering from being able to vote. Wandering is not a crime. As for fugitives from justice, as in all discussions of the accused, it is of paramount and primary importance to always operate from the presumption of innocence, lest the innocent be denied life, liberty, and property. So fugitives could not be excluded from any constitutional right and should not have been in the exception to rights under the Articles of Confederation. Again, the Constitution got this right. Article 4 has two more clauses, one which is an extradition clause, which says, if any person guilty of or charged with treason, felony, or other high misdemeanor in any state shall flee from justice and be found in any of the United States, he shall, upon demand of the governor or executive power of the state from which he fled, be delivered up and removed to the state having jurisdiction of his offense. Sounds reasonable to me. And the last sentence of Article 4 says, full faith and credit shall be given in each of these states to the records, acts, and judicial proceedings of the courts and magistrates of every other state. And this made it into the Constitution again in Article 4, but it's slightly different. This is as far as I'll go with the Articles of Confederation for now, but I shall return as needed as we go through the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers, returning to both the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution as necessary. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Jonathan, I'm curious if your reaction to what I found, and this is why I love going through these documents, the idea that the Articles of Confederation had qualifiers for who could get the privileges and immunities of the Articles. In other words, what is it, paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice were excluded. I think that was a huge mistake. I find that against everything that we stand for, that against the presumption of innocence, just because someone's a fugitive doesn't mean that, you know, they haven't been convicted, you know, and vagabonds, I could be accused of that myself. I've wandered around quite a bit. Paupers, like I said, with the welfare thing and voting, that's a different issue. But why would you exclude people because of their income, their status of being accused of a crime without a conviction, and the fact that people don't have a home or a job? I just found that interesting.
Well, the thinking originally, it is quite interesting, and that has evolved a fair amount. The thinking among a lot of people was originally that the people who, particularly in voting, mm-hmm. who make the laws, should have a stake in society,
mm-hmm.
and so. You know, the idea was that originally, although the Constitution, our Constitution does not say who can vote. It leaves it up to the states to decide that. But the idea was is that it should be a landowner.
Mm-hmm.
Because
is that written anywhere?
They have
was that the attitude?
No,
or is that put
that
down
was
somewhere.
That was in this, because these things were decided by state.
Okay.
It was left to the states to decide who is a citizen, who can vote, those kinds of things. Again, the Constitution was never really intended to get down to that little level of detail. It was just supposed to govern the collection of states on a national level, just to do the things the states can't do, like defend the defend the country, defend the borders, that sort of thing.
Well, it's good that it was left out there, but are there state constitutions?
Right.
Are there any, what are the qualifiers?
I believe so. I mean, that's my understanding. I haven't gone and studied them, but I think that's the idea. So there was this initial idea. That's why mm-hmm. someone who's a felon, who's been convicted of a felony, has their rights and their right to vote suspended because they've shown that they're not. Invested in society. They're lawbreakers. So the idea is that they would be allowed to vote. I think that it is a mistake. I'm not saying that I agree with it, but mm-hmm. that's what was the thinking, including, I think the thinking as I've heard it is that, for example, men have the right to vote because they had the idea that the man represents the household. It was that the family has a right to vote, was some of the original thinking. And the head of the household would cast the vote for the household. And again, that's not in the Constitution. That's at the state level. But that's why some of the thinking, why women didn't have the right to vote because he was supposed to, the biblical idea was that the husband and wife are one. And therefore, and legally, sometimes there's discussion early on about whether a husband or wife can sue each other because of the strong belief that they're one legally mm-hmm. and morally and spiritually. So that was the thinking. I'm not saying I endorse it, but that's where they came from.
It's interesting. I never thought about this, but unmarried women, if you use the logic that married women, and men are of one, it's one household, one vote, unmarried women, are a household unto themselves and should have the same right. If you're using the
that would make sense.
Yeah, but it didn't work out that way because women couldn't vote.
Right. The thinking was definitely imperfect.
So they were judging.
They're
making stuff up. This comes back to a whole theory of making stuff up. They made up that the man is head of the household and the household has one vote to give men the right to vote over women, because independent women who were a household themselves, couldn't do it, and that would include widows, divorced women. I don't know if divorce is big then, or women that never married should be a house unto themselves.
Right.
Huh.
But
but they couldn't really grasp the idea that, you know, a husband and wife would vote differently.
Well, that was a mistake.
You know, so we evolved.
Yeah.
To the point where, I mean, Rick Shafton, who's an election consultant, says that married women, no matter how vocal they are, vote the same way as their husbands. I would tend to think the other way around.
Look at Gene on this. Hey, Gene, feel free to join us. I mean, this is definitely, I wanted your input on this one. Do you think wealth people should vote?
What's that?
Do you think people on welfare should be able to vote with the idea that people on welfare are going to vote
I think
other people's money?
The original uh-huh. thinking, and I think was simplistic, the idea that those who were poor, who were, you know, poverty things, didn't have skin in the game in terms mm-hmm. of what, and we do have this problem that people will vote themselves benefits.
Yeah, government contracts,
so there is
teachers'
some,
unions, things like that. I don't think they should be able
right.
to vote in an election where they have a contract.
There is something to be said, you know, in both mm-hmm. in both directions. The fact that if someone has the right to vote, can just vote themselves benefits,
mm-hmm.
That's not good. But they also have a lot to say in many other respects about there's not just things that affect them financially. There's plenty of other reasons to vote too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the idea was that the poor and indigent and everything wouldn't vote responsibly because they don't have a motivation to sustain society.
See, I understand that.
So,
and that
I
makes,
mean, we have a...
Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense mm-hmm. to me. And this is why I make the exclusion of voting for people on government assistance or taxpayer assistance. So in other words, it's a conflict of interest of people who are getting welfare, who can work, you know, and maybe for whatever reason, you know, hopefully temporarily on welfare. But during that time that on welfare, they should not be able to vote. And that's a further incentive to get off welfare. Shouldn't be able to serve on a jury either. But, you know, I would think there are certain things that you shouldn't be able to do while on public assistance. Okay, because you've got a conflict.
One of the contrary arguments might be that there are more issues affected by a vote than just financial issues. There are lots of other things going on in society.
Okay,
that
so if you want to take part,
it might be voting about.
Yeah, but if you want to take part in the game, And then you should have it. You should be in there. You should not be taking money from taxpayers. You should not be taking money from your fellow workers. You know, if you want to be able to vote, I think you have to be independent. And so then the discussion, you know, if it's property owners, what about renters? You know, I've been a renter my life because I've never been able to buy a house. Would that exclude people from voting? Right. See, that would be wrong.
Originally, that would, yes.
Yeah. See, I believe that's wrong because I'm independent. I'm not living off the taxpayers. I've always supported myself, you know, and so I shouldn't be disqualified because our situation now that so many more people rent now than they did then. Hey, why don't I get your reaction? I want to bring Gene on the voting question. I'm curious what she thinks of our logic here. Jonathan, did you have a follow-up?
Not now. We'll circle back to the next topic.
Okay, that sounds good. Then I'm going to go to the Florida, you know, landlord. Yeah, we do. We got to 11 minutes. It's amazing what we can pack into a show. Gene, women in voting. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, I've always had the right to vote, so I can't imagine what it was like when women could not vote. But
yeah.
it's interesting, just the whole who should be able to vote, who should not.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that voting is a privilege in this country, and there are certain things we need to do to be able to vote. And one is to be a legal citizen. Another thing is to be law-abiding. And that's not always the case. And so that's where it gets sad. But, yeah, I really believe everybody, you know, that's here legally has a right to vote that is, you know, regardless. I think as we talked yesterday, It's you know, first, I think the whole welfare, those type of systems need to be revamped, and that will change how, you know, then those people that maybe if you say, oh, you can't be on welfare and vote, well, no one knows why they're on welfare, but the thing is, what we can do as a society is help them get off it, and if they don't take the initiative, then do what it does and say, hey, this is not meant to be a lifelong thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a bill, actually, that gets rid of welfare in 25 years. It's fascinating. Chris Barrow wrote it, and I'll have to get him back on the show to talk about it. But the idea that women, you know, were looked upon in those days as not having a brain and could not vote, that never made sense. But let me ask you the real moral dilemma question. Given the fact that women vote more socialistic than men, women vote for bigger government, men generally, you know, vote for more freedom. Here's a moral dilemma. If we could get more freedom by not having women vote, would you favor not having women vote and getting more freedom, or would you favor voting knowing that women voting is going to create more socialism? How's that for a question?
I would go with neither of those. I would say continue to educate people. Educate them.
Okay.
Make them aware of what they're voting for and what that means. It's so interesting. It's like when Obama
That's the perfect
was,
answer,
was
by the
running
way.
And the slogan terms that he used. And people,
yeah.
it, the change, whatever, it's like, what is he going to do? They couldn't say it. They could not say one thing, but all they could do was the phrase words. And it's like, we need to make people aware that it's like male or female. It's like, you don't vote just because it's your party. Vote because they align with your values. And also, we need to educate people on, okay, you want to have this program. Who's paying for it?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people don't even realize that. Really, I think a lot of younger people, and maybe older people too, but a lot of younger people just said, oh, you just go to the bank and get money or just print it. It's like, but what are the effects of that? And I think
yeah,
we
do a national debt show soon.
So we need to educate.
Yeah. I love your answer because it really epitomizes what Action Radio is about. You know, you didn't take my framework at all. I said, well, those aren't my choices. I'm going to give you a third option or a fourth option. And that's how we try to think creatively around it too. So I'm impressed. That was pretty cool. Voting appeared to be looked at, as Gene said, as a privilege, not as a right. I don't see voting as a right in the Constitution, I think, until the 13th Amendment, you know, where former slaves could vote. Was it looked upon originally as a privilege?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that the Constitution does not define who votes until, and this is where they had a problem with the wonderful Supreme Court upheld slavery by saying that a slave was not a citizen, was not able to vote. And the Supreme Court then, instead of the Congress also made a mess of it, came in and solved the problem by creating 100 new problems and made it really worse. But the Constitution, they left it to the states. And you also probably should remember that government didn't do very much compared to today. Mm-hmm. You know, there was very little that government actually did, well, at least at the federal level. There were probably intrusive state governments where one would want to vote. But it is founded on the idea that voting is a right. It's one of the most foundational. That is the concept. But at the federal level, you know, the states chose their U.S. senator.
Mm-hmm.
The states decided how to elect the president. So. It really wasn't in the federal level. Really, wasn't much involved in that. It was most of the action was in the states.
Yeah, and even the states. I don't know if they talk about voting as being a right, but the idea of there are qualifications for this gets messy when we start talking about qualifications for a right, you know, as opposed to a privilege. It's interesting that travel is a right, as argued by the Supreme Court, but driving is a privilege. Well, if driving isn't traveling, I don't know what it is, you know. So these inherent contradictions are all over the place. We're gonna have a driver's license challenge at some point too, because I believe that is unconstitutional. If travel is a right, then driving, being part of travel, is certainly a right as well. But the idea of voting, I think we are better off as a country if responsible people vote, if they actually know the issues. You know, whether that becomes an education challenge or whether it becomes something we legally mandate is the question. You know, and I think it gets messy if you try and mandate it, because A, there's always ways around it, and B, you're not, you know, doing the spirit of this, which is to get people as educated as possible. So you do have responsible voters, but certainly voter ID to, you know, those that aren't eligible, there certainly has to be eligibility. You know, you have to be 18. You have to be, you know, I don't know what else after 18, you have to be a citizen. I think that's about it, isn't it? You know, as far as voting.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
I
you have to actually you have to actually exist. You know, a non-existent person does not have a right to vote.
I think if we clean up elections, I like the idea of voting being a right, because I don't want the government to ever take that away. On the other hand, I think where the real work needs to be done is in elections and in the balloting process. I think that's where we go. So voting is definitely a right, but that doesn't mean that people can do anything they want with the ballots that you've created. We got a few minutes left. We've got about 5 minutes left. This case of this landlord in Florida infuriated me. And I know Governor DeSantis has already got he's got a regulation where fines are going to be issued, $5,000 for anybody that tries to present a vaccine mandate either in a business or in a government office, which is good. And this should take care of this guy. But where does this landlord think that they can – I got the case right here. It's in the Washington Post, which gives you a question right there. It says Florida landlord says tenants must get coronavirus vaccine. He says you don't want to get vaccinated, you have to move. Where the hell do they think they could even say such a thing?
Well, several things. First, if they're already tenants and they have a lease, you can't add new things to the lease.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't sign a contract and then somebody comes by it. And employers do this all the time on terminating somebody. They say, oh, by the way, I want you to do this new thing here.
Yeah.
If it's not in the lease, it's not in the lease. So he can't do that.
He's talking about new tenants and leaseholders can stay, but they can't renew. That's what he's saying.
I think, yeah, that would be one part of the question. So, and the other question is it is private property in a sense, but that's always clashed with anti-discrimination laws.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you change the word vaccinated to black, could he do that? Clearly not.
That's interesting.
The
but
law
that's equal protection, then, isn't it?
Say that.
Isn't that a 14th Amendment issue?
It may come under, may come under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Of course, people aren't actually sick, but there are laws against discrimination that also may violate HIPAA in the sense that he would have to.
Mm-hmm.
He
would have to know their status, and he can't ask.
Health and,
he can't ask their status.
Yeah. It's health. It's protected health information.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, generally.
Huh. Go ahead.
But generally speaking, he can. It is private property, and so there's a clash there between how far it goes. This is what makes the law difficult.
But it's open to the public. Generally. Isn't rental property mm-hmm. public accommodation in the same way that, you said, trade the word vaccinated for black. You can't open a restaurant and say it's public property and discriminate against black Americans in the same way this person should not be able to discriminate against, people that have decided not to shoot up messenger RNA, as I'm now calling it. I love that characterization. But and here's the question, too. Are people who have been vaccinated, are they going to qualify for the Americans with Disabilities Act? Are vaccine injuries, obviously deaths are, but are vaccine injuries classified as a disability? If it permanently changes your ability to function, takes away, say, you're paralyzed.
True. Right.
Has anything been done on that, on vaccine disability? There's a whole new category. So in other words, is this person inducing disabilities? Here's the thing. Given how dangerous these things are and how useless they are and how much better your natural immunity is, has anybody ever gone after these things where the science is wrong? I mean, just clearly wrong.
Well, but see, this is where, too, we talked about last week, I think, that the vaccine manufacturers have mm-hmm. immunity from the Congress.
Yeah, I could bill against that.
But,
we could change that. We've got to build to change that.
We can't. Of course, they made
the
that. But on the other hand, if this landlord requires mm-hmm. people to get vaccinated and then they have a bad reaction, could he be sued for forcing them to get vaccinated, an adverse reaction?
Yeah. Well, if you're renting property and you have a lease, is that not your property? I mean, you can't damage it because the physical property is owned by someone else. We only have about 30 seconds. But if you're renting, don't you have a certain right of property because you live there?
Yes. There is a, there's sort of an overlap. But after, yes, it's called, if you go back to the law of estates, They have a leasehold. It's a you know, a they have an estate in the land that's for a period of time. It is true.
Yeah. Okay.
And the lease, you know, that's why the term, everybody wants to call me and I say, well, I need to see the lease. You know, it depends on what it says.
Yeah. Lease is a contract. Interesting. We got about 10 seconds left.
Yeah.
Let me just hold up here. Otherwise, we're going to run out of time again. Boy, we covered a lot of stuff today. This has been fascinating. Thanks for staying the rest of the show. I appreciate it because I know Claire had to leave early.
Okay.
But we'll hit her up with more questions next week. And as usual, there's way too much news and too little time. So Jonathan, Gene, Claire, Bill, thank you everybody who participated in the show today. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time. Tomorrow is me, economics, gun stuff. It's going to be a fun day. Thank you. See you then.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks, Gene. Thanks, Jonathan.
Bye.